But I'd like to spend a few moments focusing on and giving attention to this evening is the bracha of Asher Yatzar. And I think that every summer when I come to Camp Simcha, it's the time when we have the opportunity to focus on this very important bracha, which shouldn't surprise anyone. Asher Yatzar is the bracha that we say most often in our lives. There's no bracha that we say more times than Asher Yatzar. It's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us, that our bodies function in the way that they do. And as a result of that, we recite the bracha so many times a day, so many times a year, so many times a month, and throughout our lives. So maybe it's an opportunity for us to just gain a little bit of an appreciation of what this bracha really is about, and to try to understand what it is that we should think about just momentarily as we say the bracha. Something that I try, can't say I'm perfect at it, but something that I try. It's very hard to have kavana when you say Asher Yatzar, and I'm the same as anyone else who also finds themselves not having kavana. What I try to do is at least not to be walking around when I say the bracha. It's not always easy. We're on the run, we're very busy, but at least to stop 30 seconds, just to stop, not to walk around, to have an opportunity at least to give ourselves a chance to think a little bit about what it is that we're saying. So by way of introduction to this very beautiful and meaningful bracha, Rabbeinu Bechaya writes in the Sefer Chovos HaLevavos about a mashal to a magnanimous family. It was this couple, very generous, very charitable couple, who heard on one occasion that there was a young child who was abandoned by his parents. And they make a decision that they're going to adopt this child and they're going to take care of him for all of his needs. He was neglected by his own family. And they adopt him, they bring him in, and they don't just take care of him. They do every single thing for this child. And when he was adopted, he was only 5-6 months old. And as his life grows older, as he continues to develop and mature, they send him to school, they send him to high school, they send him to college, they marry him off, and they show him so much love. They overwhelm him with affection and with love and appreciation. And they provide him with everything he could ever want in life. Some time goes by after they marry him off. It's been 20 years already. And now they're looking for a new project. And they see an ad in the newspaper that there's an individual in town who unfortunately has accumulated such an overwhelming amount of debt. And he ended up in jail and he has 6 children at home. And he's looking at a terrible life sentence and he doesn't know what to do. And he took out an ad in the paper. Maybe there's someone who would notice his terrible plight and bail him out and help him out a little bit. So this family is such a charitable family. They decide, you know what? We have extra time. We have extra money. Let's give our money to take this guy out, let him be returned to his family. So they bail him out, they pay the amount of money, and now this man is reunited with his family once again. And every moment that he has an opportunity after he's saved from his jail sentence, every moment of opportunity that he's given to be grateful to this family, he jumps on it. And he gets up at every Kiddush, at every Shevar Brachos, at every wedding, he goes to every table and he says, you don't understand who's here. You don't know who's in the room. There's a family that is so generous, that is so caring, that is so sensitive, that really took care of me. And he feels so beholden to them. He feels so grateful and so indebted. And every opportunity he has, he's just talking about it to everyone. Now ask the Chovos HaLevavos. When you look at these two individuals, the child who was abandoned and adopted by these parents, while on the other hand, we have this individual who is separated from his family, about to go to a 20-year life sentence, prison sentence, whatever it may be, and now he's freed and brought back to his family. Who really owes a greater debt of gratitude to these people? Chovos HaLevavos writes, when you think about it, obviously, the accumulated kindness of 20 years growing up in someone's house and being provided with everything requires one to be far more grateful than a one-time act. But yet, he says, we know that human nature is such that the one who's going to show more appreciation and more gratitude and gratefulness is going to be the one who, in his older years of life, was extricated from his problem by this couple. Explains the Chovos HaLevavos, why is that? Because when you have this person who's living a normal life, and then suddenly an acute situation happens, and it changes his entire life, and now someone comes along and takes him out of that danger, he's at a stage of life where he's able to appreciate so much more what it is that someone has done for him. Whereas the one who was accustomed to this from a young age, the one who from when he was 6 months old was adopted, doesn't even realize how much chesed has been done to him. We're not as grateful to our parents as we should be, because we take it for granted that they're our parents. We take it for granted that they do everything for us, that we don't even think about it. Sometimes we meet someone along the way who does a kindness for us, and we just can't stop talking about it. But think about it for a moment, take a step back and ask yourself, did they do more for me than my parents did for me? Of course not. But yet that's the way we are. And says the Chavos HaLevavos, we know that that is the case. I feel every summer when I come to Camp Simcha, this is my sixth summer here, and I feel very blessed to be here. But part of the opportunity that we have to be here at camp together is we're at a stage of our lives, all of us, where we are old enough and mature enough to be able to appreciate the gifts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us. And when you look around and you see how tragic it is that so many who are here on this campus do not have the capabilities, do not have the strength, do not have the gifts that we have. Just this evening, I was trying to take a short walk with my wife, and I noticed everybody was at the night activity, and there was one camper who was sitting on a bench right outside of the dining room together with her counselor. And I did what probably I shouldn't have done. If you heard Rifki this morning, it's like, don't go and ask, don't get involved, but I did anyway. Maybe it was wrong. And I asked the girl, is there anything I can help you with? And yeah, she was hemming and hawing. Finally, she opened up and she said, yeah, I need a ride to the night activity. I can't walk there. I just don't have strength to walk anymore. And I said, well, let me contact someone who can maybe pick you up and drive you. So I went right away to find someone who had a golf cart, tried to get them. By the time they got there, the night activity was over already. Whatever it may have been, it doesn't matter. I'm just thinking about it. You know, here's a young girl who was living a healthy life, suddenly was diagnosed with a horrific illness, has lost her strength, has nothing left in her, and cannot walk from the dining room to the social hall for a night activity. When was the last time you appreciated the fact that your legs actually work? When was the last time you appreciated that you actually have strength, that you have an appetite? Do you know that in the dining room, they didn't mention it today, but every meal that is served here, I know from previous years, there were probably 15 or 16 variations of the meals that are being prepared in the dining room. Do you know that? Now, you may not be aware, but the reason is because so many of our campers have such particular diets and such particular appetites, and they can have an allergy to something that we've never even heard of, to a spice that we don't even pay attention to. And we try to accommodate and we do whatever we can, but use it as an opportunity to appreciate the fact that you don't have to think about these problems and you don't have to think about these issues. And we need to be grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what we have and for how blessed we are to live the lives that we do. There is a beautiful story that is told about a young child who's sitting on Leil HaSeder with his grandfather. And the grandfather is telling his grandchild all about the amazing miracles of Kriyas Yamsuf. And as he's going through all the midrashim and telling him the whole story with all the dynamics, the grandchild turns to his grandfather and he says, you know, I'm very touched by the story and it's really compelling and it's beautiful, but I just have a question. Why are you so blown away by this? After all, I get it. But in the end of the day, didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu create the Yamsuf? So if he's the one who created the Yamsuf, of course he can split it. What is the big deal? What are you getting so excited about? And explain to grandfather, he said, I'd like to tell you a mashal. I'd like to explain why it is that Kriyas Yamsuf is so exciting. Why it is that we get so carried away on Leil HaSeder and we talk about Kriyas Yamsuf. The question is very compelling. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who created the Yamsuf, so of course he can split it. And the answer he gives is as follows. The answer he gives is, there was once an artist who made all kinds of different pieces of art, all kinds of different styles. And at one point he realized he's getting older. He needs to make something that's going to be his legacy. He needs to make something that everyone's going to remember him for. So he goes and he creates a beautiful horse and he chisels it out and he makes it so exquisite, so magnificent. And he talks to his family members and he says, well, how am I going to get someone who's interested in buying this? And everyone's discussing back and forth. Somebody says, I have a great idea. You should go bring your horse on the train on the subway tomorrow. Put it out at 5 o'clock in the morning in the middle of Times Square, in the middle of Manhattan, for those who are not from New York, whatever the Times Square equivalent is where you live. Put it out in the middle of the street. And as the rush hour traffic is rushing through the neighborhood, everyone's going to stop and look at it. People are going to start talking about it. one's going to turn to the other, and everyone's going to have a whole discussion, and then one person's going to offer money, the next one's going to say, no, I'll pay more, I'll pay this, and then you'll get the highest bidder. That's the way it's going to work. Great idea. He goes the next morning, drops off the horse in the middle of the street, stands off on the side, and he waits to see, and he sees 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, everyone's already at work, not a single person passed by, thousands of people walk through the street, nobody even stopped to look at it. He says, you know, everyone's busy thinking about work. They don't have time to think and focus on this. Maybe I'll wait around till lunchtime when everyone has their lunch break. They're going out of the office. Maybe they're a little bit more relaxed. He waits around till lunchtime. Same thing happens. Everybody walks right by and nobody pays attention. And he can't figure out what's happening. He says, you know what? It's still in the middle of the day. They're worrying about the meetings they have the rest of their day. He waits until they're ready to go home at the end of the workday. And once again, he sees nobody even stops to take one look at it. And he's beside himself. Comes home that evening and he's crying to his family and he says, you know, am I that bad of an artist that not a single person, thousands of people who pass by on the street today, not one of them passed by and bothered to look at what it is that was here, what I created, what I worked so hard at? And his wife tells him, you know what the problem is? You're such a good artist that what you made looks real. The horse looks real. Everybody's seen a horse. There's nothing to look at. So he says, what should I do? I should be a bad artist and make one that doesn't look real? That's poor work on my part. If I make it too good, nobody wants it. If I make it look poor, nobody's going to want it either. His wife says, I have a great idea. Take an instrument this evening and slice the horse in half. Tomorrow morning, you bring both parts of that horse into Times Square and you'll see. You'll see what will happen. Goes the next morning, brings the two parts of the horse to the middle of the street, and everyone is so overwhelmed by what they see. It looks real, but it can't be real. How can you have a horse that's split in half? And only then did they appreciate the great art of this artist that was always there. While it's true that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the Yam Sif and we have a magnificent world, unfortunately, because it looks real and because it's something we're so accustomed to, we don't stop to appreciate it. Because there's nothing to appreciate. It's who we are. But when we have, unfortunately, in life, opportunities that present themselves where the horse is split in half, where our lives just stop in the middle, it's an opportunity for us to look back and say, wow, that horse was so amazing all along. But it's only when it's split that you have the opportunity to appreciate what the Yam Sif really was. And that's the opportunity that we're given here. To look at all of life and to realize how blessed we are, how lucky we are. As the Navi says in Sefer Iyov, Mi besari echeze eloka. When I look at my body, I can see and feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not because I'm so spiritual. It's not because I'm so holy. But it's because I think about the unbelievable power of the human body. And yes, in fact, mi besari echeze eloka, from looking at my own body and the makeup of who I am and how it is that everything works together at once in tandem, that is an overwhelming thought to think about. Like the Navi Yeshaya says, su'u marom einechem, uru'u mi bara ele. Look up at the sky and just imagine, how could it be that somebody possibly created this world? It must have been HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the only way to bring ourselves to an understanding of who the Ribono Shel Olam is. And that's why David HaMelech says, Kol ha'neshama tehalal ka. We say it every day in our davening. The Gemara comments, Al kol neshima u'neshima. On every breath that we take, we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Look around and you'll see there are campers who cannot take a breath the way we do, who need assistance breathing. In Camp Simcha Special, it's a lot more severe than it is in Camp Simcha Regular. But in Camp Simcha Special, we have kids walking around with ventilators. You have kids at night who need CPAP machines who cannot breathe without them. And it's amazing to see how difficult it is for them to just simply do the act of breathing that all of us take for granted that we don't even think about. But without assistance, many of them have difficulty doing so. And that is what we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for. Every part of this world that was created for a purpose, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put every molecule of our body, every artery, every limb, every muscle, every strand of DNA, every tissue, every gland. Even I was thinking about the microscopic layers that are beneath the surface of our eye, just the layers upon layers that are the makeup of who we are is something that is so overwhelmingly powerful. And the Rambam writes, we know one of the most fundamental mitzvahs in all the mitzvahs HaTorah is the mitzvah of Avas Hashem. So the Rambam says, I have a $1 million question. How can a person come to Avas Hashem? He's not tangible. We don't really have the opportunity to interact with the Ribono Shel Olam. So yes, of course we daven. And there used to be Ruach HaKodesh, and there used to be Nevi'im, but we don't have that today. All we have is Tefillah. It's a one-sided conversation. Any of you ever had a friend who you thought was very close with you, but you're always the one who's reaching out, you're always the one who's texting, you're always the one who's calling, and they never initiate? Comes to a point where you say, you know, is this person really my friend? I don't know. You turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and you say, I daven and I daven some more. Is there anyone on the other side? Sometimes it's difficult. Sometimes it's complicated to think about that. Writes the Rambam, how do you come to a sense of Avas Hashem? We say it every day in the davening. V'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha v'chol miyodecha. How am I supposed to appreciate the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How should I love Him when I have no way to really reach Him, when He's so distant, when He's so remote from the reality of my life? Explains the Rambam, and I'm going to read you his words. Hey chu haderech la'ahavaso uliyiraso. How can I come to a sense of appreciation of Avas Hashem? The Rambam writes, b'shal sheyizbonen adam b'maisav ubruav haneflaim hagdolim. When a person considers, when you examine, when you study the complexity of the world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, v'yira mehem chachmaso she'ein lo erech v'lo keitz, and you see the unbelievable, immeasurable, infinite wisdom that HaKadosh Baruch Hu infused into the world that we live in. Miyad, says the Rambam, when I think about such thoughts, who oiv u'meshabeach u'mefar, I become infatuated with the Ribono Shel Olam. I'm just so enamored by it, I can't get beyond it, it's so amazing. How can you stop thinking about it? How can you not be in love with something that is so brilliant? How can you not be intoxicated with that? And the Rambam says, u'mis'ave taiva gedola leida Hashem agada, when that happens, I say to myself, I just have to get to know this entity better and better. I have to become closer and closer because I don't want to miss out. Who wants to miss out on that? And that's the way to come to a sense of Avas Hashem. So, that was all an introduction to the Bracha of Asher Yatzar. We're not going to spend too much time. I know everyone's exhausted. But I'm reminded that Navi Yeshaya says an amazing line, something I think about all the time. He says, "Bepiv ubisvasav kibduni, velibo rachak mimeni." I'm going to repeat. Bepiv ubisvasav kibduni. He censures the Jewish people and he says, you have respected me with your mouth and with your heart. Vilibo rachak mimeni, but your heart is so far away from me. I feel, we say this bracha of Asher Yatzar so many times a day. This is exactly what the Navi is describing. Bepiv ubisvasav kibduni. Yeah, you say it. Maybe you even look in a sitter when you say it. Maybe you even stop in your tracks for 30 seconds and you try to say it with kavana, but libo rachak mimeni, your heart is so far away from me. You don't really appreciate what this is. You don't really think about how blessed you are to have a functioning body that you do. So let's just think briefly about this bracha. Let's try to break down a little bit about it, and then we will break for the evening. Number one, we say Asher Yatzar Asa Adam Mechachma. Let me just make an observation that I saw today from Rabbi Shimshon Pinkus that I think is fascinating. I'm not sure what to do with it. But he says, how strange is it that when we come to the Bracha of Asher Yatzar, we just state the fact. We don't actually ask for anything. We just state the reality that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us, and He created us in a very complex way, and He put molecules in our body, and He put all kinds of different organs, and we have ears and eyes and noses and toes and fingers and everything. But we don't ask for anything. We just point out that this is the reality of our lives. Interesting. It's unusual. It's strange. He gives a whole explanation which I did not fully understand. That's why I'm not sharing it, but I think his question is an interesting one to think about. So we start off the bracha by saying, Asher Yatzar Asa Adam Mechachma. Anyone who wants to go to sleep, you can. It's okay. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, what is this chachma that we're referring to? Some say that Asher Yatzar Asa Adam Mechachma, the first thing we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for is that He gave us an intellect. He gave us a brain to think, to challenge, to understand, to focus, to imagine. It's something that the animals don't have. That is the great mila of a human being, that they have a mind, they have intellect, they have the ability to think things through and to make decisions for their own lives. But the Shulchan Aruch says that's not what it means. Asher yatzar asa adam mechachma really refers to the chachma of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was a brilliance of the Ribono Shel Olam in the way that he created, that he formulated every human being. And that is what we think about. Not our intellect, but the understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I always find it fascinating. If you ever look at anything scientific that is published about the body, and you see that every year they're coming up with new discoveries of something that was always inside of all of us. A new cell, a new part, something new about the DNA structure that they never understood before. A new gene that they never identified. A new recessive gene, something like that. And it just amazes me that all of that was there before. And it's been thousands of years of science continuing to develop. And we still have so much that is ambiguous, so much that is unknown about the human body. That's what we mean. Asher yatzar asa adam b'chachma. The unbelievable, awesome brilliance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in everything that makes up a human being is something that is just astounding. You think a little further into the bracha and we talk about the words that we do not find in other brachos. Galei v'yadua lefnei kisei kevodecha. Here we conjure up an image of the kisei hakavod. Suddenly we're bringing in the kisei hakavod. It's something that we don't mention in all of Shemona Esrei. Why don't we ever talk about HaKadosh Baruch Hu sitting on the kisei hakavod? Suddenly we come to Asher Yatzar. Oh! You know, the first thing that comes to my mind when I say this bracha is, wow, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sitting on a kisei hakavod, why? The Vilna Gaon asked that question. Why are we referring to the Ribono Shel Olam in that majestic sense? And I'm going to read you his words. He says the reason why is because there are those who say, I know I just said I'm going to read you his words, but I'm not. He said there are those who say, I'm saying it in English, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would never lower himself to be involved in my activities in my life. What do you think? He takes an interest in what I'm doing, and certainly when I'm taking care of my bodily functions, you think the Ribono Shel Olam is involved? He's the Melech Malchei Amlechem. He's busy with his own things. He's on his Kisei HaKavod. He is the king of the world. He doesn't have time to be busy with this nonsense. We pride ourselves in the fact that we believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that not just created the world, but like we say in the Ani Mamins, Hu Borei Umanhig. What does it mean to be a Borei Umanhig? It means HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Manhig means he's the one who continues to lead the world. He's the one who continues to look after the world. He didn't just create it and say, okay, now everyone do whatever you have to do. He didn't delegate. The Ribono Shel Olam is number one, the Borei. Number two, he's the Manhig. And says the Vilna Gaon, the reason why we conjure up the image of Kisei HaKavod when we talk about Asher Yatzar is because we need to remind ourselves that when you think of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the highest, most majestic entity in the world, sitting on his throne, sitting on the Kisei HaKavod, being involved in the most lofty ideals that this world offers, that same Ribono Shel Olam is the one that takes interest in every single aspect of our lives. Even the most mundane and the simplest that we think would be beneath his dignity to be involved with. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu does everything for us. How shocking it is if you look in Shulchan Aruch that you find there are simanim in Shulchan Aruch that describe exactly how one is to put on their clothing, take off their clothing, go to relieve oneself, how one is supposed to act in their bedroom, what everyone's supposed to do at every moment of their life, how strange it is, how you're supposed to tie your shoes. What an unusual expectation that everything is outlined in Shulchan Aruch. Why? The reason why is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu pays attention to even the smallest details of all of our lives. We then mention the next words, Gali b'yadua lefnei kisei kevodecha, that what? That we wouldn't be able to exist, eifshar lehiskayem v'la'amod lefanecha. So some say that it means, la'amod lefanecha means, we wouldn't be able to stand physically. But the Torah writes that's really not what it means. Amida, if you look in Chumash, really is a reference to serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. La'amod lesharis. And what it means is, if we weren't given life, we wouldn't be able to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We wouldn't be able to do what He wants us to do. I don't want life for myself. When we talk in the beginning of the year, Rosh Hashanah time, Zachreinu L'chaim, I ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, give me life. Why? L'man Chalukim Chaim, because I want to be able to serve You. That's the objective of life. That's why I'm here. I don't want life selfishly because I feel that I need to live. Of course, all of us want life. But we want life because L'man Chalukim Chaim. That's what we mean. We would not be able La'amod L'fanecha, to stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu means La'amod L'shareis, to stand and to serve Him. A beautiful mashal that Rav Shimshon Pinkus writes in his Sefer on the Siddur. He says, imagine you have a skyscraper. And the skyscraper has hundreds of floors. And in those floors, there are hundreds of offices. And so many conference rooms, and so much going on, and multimedia centers. And in the basement of that building, that has hundreds and hundreds of rooms in it, in the basement of that building, there's an electric box with all kinds of switches. And writes of Shimshon Pincus, how much is the building worth? Let's say $200 million is the worth of the building. If you would sell the property, it would be worth millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. How much is the electric box downstairs in the basement worth? You went to Home Depot, you went to Lowe's, you bought an electric box, you had an electrician come in and set everything up. It costs $100, $200, $300. When you're thinking about the cost of the building, you don't even pay attention to the few hundred dollars that the electric box costs and all the switches in there. However, he writes, with all that, hundreds of millions of dollars of worth of the building and the property, what happens if someone goes and turns off all the switches? The switches that really only cost $100. If you turn off the switches, all the hundreds of millions of dollars of value in the building are worth nothing. If there's no electricity, if there's no phone lines, if there's no internet access, if there's no multimedia center because all the electricity is out and none of the systems are working, then the tens and hundreds of millions of dollars are worth nothing. Writes of Shimshon Pincus, we know that our world is filled with all kinds of lofty opportunities for all of us to observe mitzvahs, to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's wonderful and it's beautiful and it's so nice, but all of that is impossible if the electric box, which is little me, that's worth nothing, is not functioning. I can't serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I cannot be involved in the hundreds of millions of dollars of projects that he wants me to do if the switch is off. And he points out, I think, something that's such a powerful idea. We know even after someone passes away, they have a neshama. There's something that's left of that person. So what's so terrible? If life is all about spirituality, what's wrong? My most valuable asset is still here. What's the big deal? So someone's not here anymore. But the most important part of them is still here. The ruach, the neshama. The answer is because the electric box is off. The switch is off. If you don't have a guf, if you don't have a body, if you're not alive, you cannot do anything anymore. And you cannot come and make an investment that's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yef shar la'amod lefanecha. I will not be able to serve you properly if you don't give me the opportunity to have life. If you don't give me the chance to have healthy life. It's not because I need it for myself. I need it for you. I need it for the investment. I need it for the multi-million dollar skyscraper building that is my life, that you want me to accomplish. If the switches are off, if the systems aren't working, there's no way for me to accomplish any of that. And I think it gives perspective to all that we ask about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and all that we wish for in the beautiful lives that we live. We then make a comment, we would not be able to live afilu sha'a achas. Now the Maharam Rutenberg, who is the Rebbe of the Rush, points out that that really shouldn't be a phrase that makes sense, because we know, anybody here in the lifeguarding team? Somebody? So, are you like super swimmers, I assume? Probably, I hope so. So, okay, because I won't go swimming. You don't sound very confident. So, we know that people who know how to swim really well can go underwater for more than 1 second. They can hold their breath and they have no trouble at all. So what do we mean? If we hold our breath for 1 minute, afilu sha'a achas, that's it, life is over. It's not true. So what do we mean, afilu sha'a achas? So the Maharam Rutenberg deletes that line from the bracha. The tour says, no, you shouldn't take it out. It makes a lot of sense. What are we referring to? Not that we wouldn't be able to hold our breath. We all know people can hold their breath and they're fine and they survive and it's okay. The Torah writes, what this is a reference to is the Zman Yitzias Havlad, the moment of childbirth. The moment of childbirth, so many things have to happen at the exact same time. A child stops depending on its mother and starts learning to gasp for air at the very same moment. Writes the Torah, if that is off even for 1 second, the brain damage and the irreversible damage to that child is something that cannot be switched. It's irreversible. It's something that is so catastrophic. And it happens because 1 second was off, because the body was not doing exactly what it should at that pivotal moment, at that decisive moment of life, when the child was coming into existence. And that is what we mean when we refer to Ef Charlie Iskayim Afilu Shah Achas, even one moment, if that moment of life when we all came to be would not do exactly what it was supposed to at that very important juncture, none of us would be able to have the lives that we do. Timing is everything. And it's so important for us. You know, I think about it all the time. I have five, but Lee Ayanhar, five healthy, vibrant young boys who keep me very young and keep me running around. And I hope that they'll interact with all of you. They seem to make themselves very comfortable with everybody here and enjoy them. They're a joy. They're really wonderful. But I remember after we had our first child, I was so shaken up in the hospital. I just could not get over the experience. Everything was healthy and smooth and amazing. Easy for me to say. I know I wasn't in labor. But I was in far worse shape than my wife was, let's just say. The doctors turned to me. They're like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "Not really." My wife is like, "Yeah, he's not okay. I'm fine." But I was so overwhelmed with emotion. I have to be a very emotional person. Anybody here, just as an aside, every single year I feel the same thing. I cry when these campers show up at the front of camp and start getting off the buses. I'm so overwhelmed every time. It's my sixth time watching this. It doesn't get old. It's amazing to watch these kids, to see the hope that all of you give them. Like I said this morning, feels like this morning was a lifetime ago. But it's just such an overwhelming feeling. It's so amazingly emotional. So I remember when we had our first child, I was so overwhelmed. And at the time, I had called Reb Nassen Tzvi Finkel of the Mir Yeshiva to let him know that we had a baby. So I told him that we had a baby, and he wished a mazel tov. And he said, "How's your wife feeling?" I said, "She's fine." And he said, "How's your child?" I said, "Everything's healthy." So I told him I was so overwhelmed by the experience. It was just something that was so otherworldly to see a child come into the world and everything's healthy and you're so nervous till the doctor tells you, yes, your child is breathing and your child has 10 fingers and 10 toes and all the organs seem to be working right and he's able to do everything at normal function as he's supposed to at this age. It's a tremendous bracha. And I remember I told him how overwhelmed I was at that feeling, at that understanding. And he said that some explain that that's what it means in the Mishnah. Ezehu chacham haro'es hanolad. The person who has a life that is meaningful, a life of chachma, is somebody who for all of their life thinks about that moment of birth. Is constantly ro'es hanolad. Someone who sees what the experience of childbirth is and understands what a gift and what a bracha it is and how overwhelming it is that things actually go right. And you live all of life with that kind of perspective. And I think it's so important for us to think about, but that's exactly what we mean when we say, Afilu Shah Achas. The Torah writes, we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for that one moment of life at childbirth when so many things could have gone wrong, should have gone wrong. We look around the world and we see how many things do go wrong with others. And we understand and appreciate how blessed and how lucky we are. And finally, we end the bracha by saying, Mafli La'asos. Mafli means a pele, something amazing, something unbelievable. What is the pele? What is so miraculous, what is so unbelievable about our bodies? So, the tour explains, perhaps the reason why this is such a pele is because, think about it, if you have a balloon, and it's filled with air, and then you pop a hole in the balloon, what's going to happen? All the air comes out, and it becomes deflated. Rise the tour, think about your body. You have holes all over your body, and yet, how come everything's not coming out? Doesn't make sense. How can everything be contained when there are such easy ways for everything inside to come out? And yet the body knows what belongs inside, what belongs outside. The body knows when to extract something and when to keep something in. That is an unbelievable pella. That defies the rules of nature. That really does not make sense. Because when you think about anything else that is filled up, if you poke a hole in it, everything falls out. That is the pella. But the Rama says that perhaps that's not what we mean. The Rama tells us that what we mean about a pella of life is the fact that we have two opposites that are so close in proximity to each other, and yet they don't clash. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a neshama tahora. The Ribbono Shel Olam gave us a neshama inside of a guf, something that is so physical, with something so spiritual inside of it, and yet they don't hate each other. And somehow they get along, and somehow they work together, and somehow they accomplish great things in life. That is the Pella, says the Ramah. The fact that our guf and neshama can be subsumed under one organism, in one body, can work together, can accomplish things as one. That is the greatest Pella of our lives. It's the greatest Pella of our bodies. It's the greatest astounding miracle of all of who we are and the makeup of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu made all of us. And that is what we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for every single day, and that is why after the Bracha of Asher Yatzer every day, writes the Ramah, we recite immediately following the Bracha of Elokai Neshama. Because we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the Neshama that we have that is part of the Pella, part of the amazing wonder of who we are as a people. Let me just close with this. The Pasuk says that when Leah had her child, she names him Yehuda. Why does she name him Yehuda? The Sukkim tell us, Hapam Odes Hashem, she realized she has to be grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does the Torah say upon Leah mentioning Hapam Odes Hashem, Vatama Miledes? Leah doesn't have the opportunity to have more children. I would say, if Leah is the one who knows how to be grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why'd she call her son Yehuda? To remind herself of how much she owes the Ribbono Shel Olam. Every time she called out to him in the park when he was playing in the sand, she says, Yehuda la, she wants to remember all of her feelings, all of her love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I would say if you have a person like that who responds to the Ribbono Shel Olam's kindness in that way, I would say, let's give her 100 more children. If this is the way she appreciates, let's give her some more. Why is it Vatama Miledes? Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu suspend Leah's ability to have children? And secondly, you contrast that with Rachel Imenu. The Tur writes in his commentary on Chumash, Rachel Imenu has a child, and what does she name him? Yosef. Why? Says the Pasuk, Yosef Hashem li ben acher. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, give me another one. So imagine, you have a young child who wants a lollipop. And he's nagging at you, and he keeps pulling, and he's saying, oh, I want this, I want that. Finally, you give in. You say, okay, fine. One time, we're going to give you this. The minute the kid gets it, doesn't even open it up yet. Can I have another one? Say to the kid, you didn't even have a moment to appreciate what I gave you. How disrespectful is it? The moment I give it to you, already thinking about the next? Take a moment to appreciate what you have, and then we'll talk about something in the future. Rachel Imenu, the moment she has a child, names him Yosef Hashem li ben acher, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm not happy, give me more. It seems almost inappropriate. And what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? Gives her another child. What does he do to Leah when she says, thank you so much, I appreciate it, I'm so overwhelmed by your kindness? Stops her ability to give birth to more children. Explains it to her, perhaps what it means is as follows. When we deal with human beings, our ability to give is finite. At some point, we run out of resource. I want to give, but I don't have the ability to. I run out of money. I run out of goods. I run out of something to give. I don't have the ability to endlessly give. And that's why it's inappropriate for a human being to be asked to give again. When we're dealing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there is no limit to His kindness. There is no limit to how much the Ribbono Shel Olam could provide us with and give us in our lives. Rachel Imenu understands, you gave me a child, but I know you can do more. I know I can ask you for more, and I know that for the rest of my life, I am going to be dependent on you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yosef Hashem li ben acher, anything good I want in my life is going to come from you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not going to be me. It's going to be you providing it for me. Leah Imenu, on the other hand, has a child, names him Yehuda, and says, you know, thank you so much. My life is perfect right now. I appreciate everything you gave me. Now I can move on without you. You think anything good in your life is going to come without the Ribbono Shel Olam's involvement? The Tur writes, when something good happens to us, we need to acknowledge it and we need to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we know how good this is, but the only way we're going to have good in our lives going forward is if you continue to provide us with that. It's not going to happen. It's not Muvan Me'elav. It's not something that we take for granted. Look around this camp. What I find so powerful about Camp Simcha as opposed to Camp Simcha Special, the two very different experiences, different kinds of kids, different kinds of illnesses. When you have a child who's inflicted with cancer, Rachmana Litzlan, that means that child was living a normal, healthy, productive, functioning life until a diagnosis. And then everything becomes complicated. And as a result of that, they realize that nothing is taken for granted. Nothing is to be taken for granted. Because they realize that every moment that they have good health is only because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives it to them. It's only because HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides. And sometimes, when we have so much good in our lives, it's easy to ignore or neglect the Ribono Shel Olam. Rachel Imenu taught us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you something good, the immediate response is, Yosef Hashem Li Ben Acher. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I know that the only good I have in my life is only because of you. The only way that I'll have good going forward is only because of you. And I ask you to continue to provide for me, because without your providing, I will not have it. So again, these are just some brief thoughts. I hope I didn't go too far over time. Some brief thoughts about the Bracha Vasher Yatzar. I always feel that this is an extremely appropriate time for all of us to give consideration to this bracha. If we're going to walk away from Camp Simcha with nothing else other than the fact that we should just have a few moments of thought throughout the year about this bracha every time we say it, or at least once a day when we say it, something of that nature, we can say, Dayenu, we already grew from this experience, if not for anything else. So Amir Tashem should have the opportunity to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the happy and healthy and wonderful and productive lives that all of us have. Alu v'atzlichu, you should continue to inspire your children, continue to inspire all of us.